Getting Better Acquainted with Your Bible, Lesson 2. Outstanding Characters of the Old Testament, Continued. Moses. There was a long interval between the time of Joseph and that of Moses. According to the King James Version, the Israelites sojourned in Egypt over 4 centuries. As the Israelites increased in number, the Egyptians began to fear that they might become too powerful, so they were greatly oppressed. A decree went out from a new Pharaoh that every son that is born ye shall cast into the river. Think of that decree. At this time Moses was born, son of Amram and Jochebed, of the tribe of Levi. To save him, his mother put him in an ark of bulrushes and hid it in the reeds by the edge of the river. Pharaoh's daughter discovered the babe. She had compassion on him. He became her son and was brought up with a knowledge of Egyptian court life. One day Moses saw an Egyptian smite a Hebrew, so he slew the Egyptian. Thompson New Chain Reference Bible states that this was his fleshly attempt to aid his brethren. The next day he attempted to mediate between 2 Hebrews who strove together. His effort was rejected, and they turned on him. One asked, "Who made thee a prince and judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian?" The commentary on the whole Bible by Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown observes, "These 2 incidents prove that neither were the Israelites yet ready to go out of Egypt, nor Moses prepared to be their leader. It was by the staff and not the sword, by the meekness and not the wrath of Moses, that God was to accomplish that great work of deliverance." End of quote. When Pharaoh learned that Moses had killed an Egyptian, he sought to slay him. But Moses fled into Midian, east of the Gulf of Aqaba. Moses' life was divided into 3 periods of 40 years each. The first period covered his life in Egypt. The second covered his 40 years in Midian, his marriage to Zipporah, daughter of Jethro, and his keeping of Jethro's flocks. The third covered his 40 years in the wilderness as leader of Israel. Let me speak to you of the second period. As Moses kept Jethro's flocks, he came to Mount Horeb, and there God revealed himself in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And although the bush burned with fire, it was not consumed. Moses turned to see this great sight, and when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called him out of the midst of the bush, and he answered, "Here am I." Then God said, "Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people out of Egypt." Moses questioned, "Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh?" But God said, "Certainly I will be with thee." Moses then asked, "When I come unto the children of Israel and say unto them, 'The God of your fathers hath sent me unto you,' and they shall say, 'What is his name?' What shall I say unto them? And God said, I am that I am. And thou shalt say to the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. And they shall hearken to thy voice. Here God is revealed by the name Yahweh, or Jehovah, the self-existent one. Moses still hesitated. They will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice. So he was given proof of God's power, that he might go forward with confidence. First, in the turning of his rod into a serpent, and in its transformation again into a rod. Second, in the healing of his leprous hand. It shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. Moses was told, when thou goest into Egypt, say to Pharaoh, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. Let my son go, that he may serve me. Moses and his brother Aaron gathered together the elders of the children of Israel. The people believed and bowed their heads and worshipped. Then Moses with Aaron went before Pharaoh, sending forth that great cry, Let my people go. But Pharaoh would not let them go. He scattered them abroad. But God said, I have remembered my covenant. I will bring you out. I will redeem you. I will take you to me for a people, and I will be to you a God. And I will bring you in unto the land concerning the which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And I will give it you for an heritage. Then came the 10 plagues. Pharaoh hardened his heart, and with each plague, greater suffering fell upon the Egyptians. After the 10th plague, Pharaoh let the Israelites go. They fled to the southeast, to the shores of the Red Sea. Pharaoh soon repented his decision and took 600 of his chariots and his horsemen and pursued them. They were terrified, complaining that Moses should have let them alone. But he commanded, Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. God said to Moses, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. Lift thou up thy rod, and stretch out thine hand over the sea, and divide it. The children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. In the 3rd month they came to the wilderness of Sinai. God renewed his covenant, this time with the nation of Israel. He told them, If ye will obey my voice, keep my covenant, ye shall be a peculiar treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. Moses went up into the mount. God's glory was manifested, And to him were given the Ten Commandments, or the Decalogue, and other laws and ordinances. To Moses was also divinely communicated a religious system, sacrificial and ceremonial in form, one whose every institution typified and prefigured the redemptive work of Israel's coming Messiah. A tabernacle was erected, and an Aaronic priesthood ordained. Through the third period of 40 years, Moses led Israel, governed them, and prepared them for entrance into the Promised Land. Just before their entrance, he explicitly prophesied their coming Messiah. The Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him ye shall hearken. New Analytical Bible says of Moses, he is the world's greatest lawgiver. He was the man of the hour. He stands out in biblical history as one of its most remarkable figures, great from every standpoint. His leadership, statesmanship, legislative capacity, piety, and loyalty to God. End of quote. It is recorded that Moses went up to Mount Nebo on Pisgah. From the mount he saw all the Promised Land, that he was buried in a valley of Moab, but no man knows of his sepulcher to this day, that although he was 120 years old, his eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. Again, New Analytical Bible states, we have seen this striking figure of the ages on two mounts, Sinai and Pisgah, but we are to see him on another, Mount Hermon. There, centuries afterward, he who at Sinai, in the presence of the law, saw God face to face, now on Hermon, he is face to face with the Messiah, the fulfillment of the law, in all the glory of his transfiguration. End of quote. Joshua was the son of Nun of the tribe of Ephraim and successor to Moses. It was Joshua who immediately after the exodus from Egypt commanded the forces of Israel in their first battle in the wilderness when they defeated the Amalekites at Rephidim. Joshua conducted the battle. Moses prayed, holding up the rod of God. Here is seen the power of prayer in winning this battle. Joshua was minister to Moses and attended on him at Mount Sinai. He was one of the 12 tribal representatives sent from Kadesh Barnea to search out the land of Canaan. After 40 days, the 12 spies returned. Joshua and Caleb were the only two who gave a good report. Caleb said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. The other 10 said, we be not able, for the people are stronger than we. Because of their distrust and cowardice, the Israelites were condemned to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. And at the end of that time, Joshua and Caleb were the only two of that great company over 20 years of age, numbered at Sinai, who were permitted to enter the land. They alone had wholly followed the Lord. New Analytical Bible observes, now that the work of Moses is completed, it is necessary that the people have another leader. How fitting that the mantle of the great leader Moses should be laid upon Joshua. But in God's program, there is always a Joshua to follow a Moses. End of quote. Joshua led his people to Jordan, and they passed over Jordan on dry ground into Canaan. Under Joshua's leadership, Jericho, which commanded the eastern entrance to the Promised Land, was the first Canaanite city to be conquered. For the next 24 years, Joshua successfully led the armies of Israel in the conquest of Canaan. The Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised throughout all the country. At the end of this period, although the land was not yet wholly subjugated, tribal allotments of land were made by actual survey. Levitical cities were designated. Near the close of his life, Joshua solemnly exhorted his people, put away strange gods, and incline your heart unto the Lord God of Israel. The people answered, the Lord our God will we serve, and his voice will we obey. I am mentioning only two of the 15 judges. Gideon, fifth of the judges, was of the tribe of Manasseh. Israel had deserted its faith and had for 7 years been oppressed by its enemies, this time by the Midianites. Israel was greatly impoverished. They cried unto the Lord, and he sent a prophet. This time that prophet was Gideon. As Gideon was threshing, an angel saluted him. The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Gideon, like Moses, was doubtful of his ability to deliver his people from their enemies. He prayed, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou talkest with me. And he was given 3 signs. When Gideon called for an army, 32,000 answered the call to serve. But the Lord said, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Given the opportunity, 22,000 fearful men withdrew. But the sifting went on. The Lord said, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. Every one that lappeth of the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink. The number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, like active men in haste, were 300. But all the rest bowed down upon their knees to drink. Only 300 of the 10,000 qualified, and only these 300 were chosen to go against the enemy, who were as grasshoppers for multitude. In this instance, it was necessary that Israel clearly see the intervention of God on its behalf. Gideon divided his men into three companies, giving each man a trumpet, also a pitcher containing a lamp. At his direction, his men blew the trumpets, which they held in their right hands, broke the pitchers, and exposed the lamps, which they held in their left hands, and shouted their message, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." They stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host fled. The enemy turned every man against his fellow. Victory was Israel's, and the enemy fled beyond Jordan. Then the men of Israel offered Gideon and his son the kingship. But Gideon said, "I will not rule, neither shall my son rule. The Lord shall rule over you." Samuel, the 15th and last of the judges. Samuel came when the moral and spiritual values of the nation were at low ebb, and Israel had almost ceased to tend the lamp of her divine destiny. He was the son of Hannah and Elkanah. Hannah had been barren. She prayed for a child, making a vow that she would give him into the service of God all the days of his life. And Hannah kept that vow. When the child was weaned, she brought him to the tabernacle in Shiloh, there to abide forever. And Samuel ministered before Eli, the high priest. While still a boy, Samuel received his prophetic call, and his answer was, "Speak, for thy servant heareth." The message to him was that the priestly house of Eli would fall because of the wickedness of Eli's sons, whom he had failed to restrain. The Bible records, "Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and did let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel from Dan, even to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord." While Samuel served in Shiloh, Israel was oppressed by the Philistines. The Ark of the Covenant was captured in battle. Eli's sons were slain, and the house of Eli was destroyed. With the fall of the priestly house of Eli, Samuel became the spiritual leader of Israel, as well as a judge. With Samuel an important stage of biblical history was introduced. The priesthood diminished in power, and prophecy became a fixed element of the religious life, a continuous and organized institution. And around Samuel gathered a band of men known as sons of the prophets. When Samuel was old, he made his sons judges. But the people were dissatisfied. They demanded a king that they might be like all the nations. The Lord said, "Hearken unto the voice of the people. They have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." So Samuel anointed Saul, a Benjamite, as Israel's first king. And Saul reigned for 15 years. During his reign, he presumed upon the priestly office of Samuel. He disobeyed God's commands in battle and was finally rejected for disobedience. Samuel was sent under divine direction to Bethlehem to anoint one of the sons of Jesse, David, who later became king. David. Before we take up his life, please turn to pages 19b and 19c, which show maps of the United Kingdom under David and Solomon, and the divided kingdom after the death of Solomon. The name David means well-beloved. David was the youngest son of Jesse, of the tribe of Judah, the great-grandson of Boaz and Ruth. He was a shepherd caring for his father's sheep at the time Samuel came to anoint him. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. Then came war with the Philistines. Their champion, Goliath, a man of great physical power, challenged a man from the armies of Saul. The Israelites were afraid, but David volunteered to fight him. He challenged Goliath, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand." David, armed only with a shepherd's sling, ran toward Goliath. With one stone he smote Goliath in the forehead, and he fell to the earth. So David prevailed, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Saul set David over his armies. David's fame as a great warrior soon exceeded the king's. Saul became so jealous that he made several attempts to kill him. But David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. To ensnare David, Saul promised him his daughter Michal as a wife, but demanded the lives of 100 Philistines as a dowry, hoping for David's death in battle. But David fulfilled the terms of the dowry and became the king's son-in-law. and Michael loved him, and Jonathan, Saul's son, loved him, and all the people loved him. So Saul, in fear and fury, became his enemy continually. When Saul's hatred toward David became murderous, it was first Michael and then Jonathan who saved his life. David was forced to become a fugitive for the next 6 years. During this time, he had the opportunity more than once to take Saul's life, but he spared it. Later, when Saul was at war with the Philistines, Saul lost his army. 3 of his sons were slain, and because nothing was left to him, he fell on his own sword. Thus, at the age of 30, David became king of Judah. He ruled at Hebron for 7.5 years, while the house of Saul governed the remaining tribes. He conquered Jebusite Jerusalem, made it the capital. Then all the tribes of Israel accepted David as their king, and for 33 years he ruled over the United Kingdom. One of David's earliest acts as king of all Israel was to bring the Ark of the Covenant to the capital, thus moving the seat of worship from Shiloh to Jerusalem. David's kingdom and reign were, from the beginning, identified with monotheism. David's love for Bathsheba and his great sin with her had a profound effect on his life. As he walked upon the roof one day, he saw this woman who was beautiful to look upon, and sent his messengers for her. Later, when he found that Bathsheba was to bear him a child, David sent her husband, Uriah, to the forefront of the hottest battle that he might die. And he did die. Then David made Bathsheba his wife, but he had sinned against God in what he had done. The prophet Nathan came to David with the parable of the ewe lamb, and by his parable caused David to look within himself, to be his own judge, and to acknowledge his sin. Nathan said, "By this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme." In great humility, David repented. He went in, lay upon the earth, and fasted for 7 days. However, the child was taken from him. But he comforted Bathsheba, whom he loved, and she brought forth another son, Solomon, and the Lord loved him. Toward the close of David's reign, in disobedience to God's command, he numbered the people. To make amends for this disobedience, he purchased the threshing floor of Araunah in Jerusalem and built an altar to God. He then purposed to erect a temple to house the Ark of the Covenant. He made elaborate preparation for its construction, but he was forbidden to build it because he had been a man of war and had shed blood. Therefore, he said to Solomon, "Take heed now, for the Lord hath chosen thee to build an house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it. New Analytical Bible says of David, he was a man of unwavering faith in God. His trust was simple, but eternally rooted. He sank to no depths of iniquity without rising to correspondingly greater heights of penitence, desire for pardon, purity, and communion with God. End of quote. To David, God's covenant was assured. Thine house and thy kingdom shall be established forever before thee. Thy throne shall be established forever. Paul later wrote, of this man's seed hath God, according to his promise, raised unto Israel a Savior, Jesus. Solomon. His name means the peaceful one. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David, his father. When Solomon was asked of God in a dream what he wished for, his answer was, give therefore thy servant an understanding heart, that I may discern between good and bad. The wisdom which was given to Solomon was a gift from God. Some of that wisdom has come down through the centuries in our Bible. And so long as Solomon used it in God's service, he prospered. Solomon began his reign well. He consolidated the kingdom, extended commerce with other nations, and his wealth and renown grew steadily. He gave Israel a place among the great monarchies of the East, a place it had never had before and was never to have again. He carried out the plans of his father David in the building in Jerusalem of a magnificent temple to God, and in its solemn consecration and dedication. From the religious point of view, the building of the temple was the outstanding feature of his reign. Solomon's wealth and prosperity beguiled him into extravagant living. For his royal projects, he established the practice of forced labor. He swept away tribal rights. He levied heavy taxes, and the excessive demands upon the people brought about social discontent. All this prepared the way for the disruption of the kingdom. As Solomon fulfilled his ambitions for the kingdom, he became satiated with worldly success, and he was drawn to idolatry and sensuality. When he was old, his many foreign wives turned away his heart after other gods, after Ashtoreth, Chemosh, Moloch, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God. Thompson New Chain Reference Bible makes the comment, he is known as the wisest man, and yet his wisdom did not teach him self-control. End of quote. After the death of Solomon, the kingdom was divided about 932 BC. The kingdom of Judah to the south and the kingdom of Israel to the north. From the moment of separation, the northern kingdom corrupted the worship of Jehovah, and its people were drawn to idolatry. Elijah. In 875 BC, nearly 60 years after the division of the kingdom, appeared the prophet Elijah during the reign of King Ahab in Israel. The kingdom of Israel reached its most terrible period of apostasy during the reign of Ahab and his Phoenician wife Jezebel. For through Jezebel, Phoenician Baal worship was introduced into Israel. Elijah was a solitary figure. His life was spent in a struggle with the evils of his time. It was his task to wipe out the worship of heathen deities and to raise the religion of God to a purer standard. The very first sentence recorded of Elijah was a judgment of a severe drought on King Ahab's kingdom because of the wicked course he was pursuing, a drought and famine which were to last 3 years. During this period, there occurred many miracles in the life of Elijah. He was fed by ravens at Cherith. He multiplied the oil and meal of the widow of Zarephath. He raised her son from the dead. At the end of this time, Elijah was commanded by God, "Go, show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth." When Ahab asked, "Art thou he that troubleth Israel?" Elijah answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but thou, in that thou hast forsaken the commandments. Send, therefore, and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the groves, 400, which eat at Jezebel's table." So they gathered. Let us hear Elijah's challenge. "How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." In the test which came, the prophets of Baal called all day upon their God to bring fire upon their altar. But there was neither voice nor any to answer. At evening, Elijah calling only once upon God to bring fire upon his altar was successful. The fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the dust, and licked up the water. When all the people saw it, they acknowledged, "The Lord, he is the God." Elijah commanded, "Take the prophets of Baal. Let not one of them escape." And they took them and slew them. Then Elijah prayed for the fulfillment of God's promise, and a great rain fell. Queen Jezebel, patroness of the prophets of Baal, threatened to kill Elijah before a day had passed. So he fled for his life, first to Beersheba, then into the wilderness, Being discouraged, he requested for himself that he might die. But miraculously sustained by the ministration of an angel, he journeyed to the sanctuary of Horeb, nearly 200 miles to the south. The word of the Lord came to him at Horeb, saying, "What doest thou here, Elijah?" He answered, "I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, slain thy prophets, and I only am left, and they seek my life to take it away." He was commanded, "Go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord." And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountain. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake, a fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. Elijah was not permitted to lay down his work. He was bidden to appoint Hazael king over Syria, Jehu king over Israel, and Elisha as his own successor. Three men later instrumental in destroying the Baal worship Elijah had struggled to exterminate. So Elijah found Elisha and cast his mantle upon him. Elisha at once recognized the call from God. He left his work, his family, his home, and followed Elijah. Elisha later became known as that prophet which poured water on the hands of Elijah. When the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, Elisha went with Elijah from Gilgal. As they journeyed together, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel." A second time, "Tarry here, for the Lord hath sent me to Jericho." And a third time, "Tarry here, for the Lord hath sent me to Jordan." Each time Elisha answered, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee." Twice the sons of the prophets said, "Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today?" And twice he answered, "Yea, I know it. Hold your peace." And they too went on. They too stood by Jordan. And Elijah took his mantle, wrapped it together, smote the waters. They were divided. They too went over on dry ground. When they were gone over, Elijah said, "Ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee." And the answer came, "Let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me." Elijah said, "Thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. And there appeared a chariot of fire, and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it. New Analytical Bible comments that this Elijah continued to exist was abundantly established by his appearance centuries later in the Mount of Transfiguration. There, with Moses, the great representative of the law, and Elijah, the representative of the prophets, is Jesus, the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. End of quote. Following Elijah's translation, Elisha took hold of his own clothes and rent them in two pieces. He took up also the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and went back and stood by the bank of Jordan. He smote the waters and said, "Where is the Lord God of Elijah?" The waters parted, and Elisha went over. Elisha became the acknowledged successor of Elijah, the second great prophet of Israel. He labored for nearly 50 years under four of the kings of Israel, Jehoram, Jehu, Jehoahaz, and Jehoash. All of Elisha's miracles were performed after he received the double portion of the Spirit. He multiplied the widow's oil. He promised a son to the Shunammite. He raised her son from the dead. He healed deadly pottage. He fed 100 men with 20 loaves. He caused iron to swim. Thompson New Chain Reference Bible states, "The outstanding lesson of Elisha's life was the power of divine grace." The last character we are considering, the great Jewish patriot Nehemiah, came some 400 years later, in the period of the Restoration. Nehemiah, cupbearer to King Artaxerxes of Persia, was in the palace in Shushan when Hanani brought him word concerning Jerusalem. The returned exiles were in great affliction and reproach, and the walls of Jerusalem, destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, were still in ruins. Nehemiah appeared in Artaxerxes' presence, sad of countenance. When the king beheld Nehemiah's sorrow, he permitted him to go to Jerusalem, making him governor of Judah. Nehemiah reached Jerusalem in 445 B.C., He said, "I was in Jerusalem 3 days, neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do." He went by night to survey the broken walls and gates. Then he reported to the Jews, "Ye see how Jerusalem lieth waste. Come, let us build up the wall, that we be no more a reproach." They agreed, "Let us rise up and build." So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Hostile Samaritans Ammonites, and Arabians, led by Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, laughed with scorn. But Nehemiah confidently declared, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us." When mockery failed, the adversaries united to fight against them. But Nehemiah armed his workmen and set a watch. They which builded on the wall, and they that bear burdens, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other held a weapon. 4 times Nehemiah's enemies tried to entice him outside the city walls. But he answered, "I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease, whilst I leave it and come down to you?" In 52 days the wall was finished, for the people had a mind to work. New Analytical Bible states, "What a dilapidated condition Nehemiah beheld, and what a change took place within 52 days. When divine grace becomes truly operative in the soul, how quickly the ruins of sin can disappear and a spiritual structure arise. The workmen were armed as they labored to build the walls, so that the walls themselves would be their real protection. The rearing and establishing of Zion in our own hearts is the believer's true defense. When he comes to realize that every attempt by a godless world will be made to break down his spiritual defense, he will be careful to build more surely, leave no gaps, and like Nehemiah, while building, he will make his prayer unto God." End of quote. The closing words of the book of Nehemiah are, "Remember me, O my God, for good." We have walked through the centuries of Old Testament history with these great men who trod the upward path, who held aloft the torch of spiritual truth. This survey of their lives reveals to you, does it not, the continuous chain of unfoldment and revelation? Acknowledgement is made for permission to quote from Commentary on the Holy Bible by J.R. Dumelow, copyright 1908 by Macmillan Publishing Company, Incorporated, renewed 1936 by John R. Dumelow. The Abingdon Bible Commentary, used by permission of Abingdon Press. Ur of the Chaldees by Sir Leonard Woolley, published by Ernest Benn, Limited. Dictionary of the Bible by James Hastings, published by Charles Scribner's Sons. New Analytical Bible, John A. Dixon Publishing Company. New Chain Reference Bible, edited by Frank C. Thompson, published by B.B. Kirkbride Bible Company, Incorporated. This concludes Lesson 2. Please fast forward to end of tape. Lesson 3 begins on Cassette 3.